Today is Thursday. It's April 20th, 2017. It's 9:08 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast. We record in the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this podcast are heard on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 a.m. on WGN.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the podcast Prickly Podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the rambunctious columnist from the Chicago Tribune. My column runs Wednesdays, Fridays, Sundays.
What did you say the name of the cartoon is?
Prickly City?
You said, I think, Prickly Podcast.
I do the Prickly City Podcast.
Oh, I see.
It's a podcast about, I've been a guest on, I was a guest panelist on
this
podcast.
He's only the second guest. The first one was Gary Johnson.
Wow. Wait a minute, who's Gary Johnson?
Libertarian candidate for president.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't find Aleppo.
He doesn't know who Aleppo, what Aleppo is.
He's still looking.
Oh, my gosh, that's right.
He's still looking.
Ding, 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 ding.
Who is Gary Johnson? How quickly we forget.
Speaking of the media, Bill O'Reilly will no longer be on Fox News. We talked yesterday about whether or not Fox should give him one farewell show. Would you let him back on, Scott?
Hell no. Hell no. I mean, that whole toxic environment over at Fox. Ailes goes... Ailes? The hell. Who cares?
And $40 million cares.
Yeah, well, and they paid out, what, over $10 million? I think it's the number is $13 or $14 million for harassment suits against O'Reilly. No, these are pigs. These are horrible, terrible people who shouldn't be on the air.
I strongly disagree that you shouldn't allow him to have a farewell show. I think it should not be live, but I think they should put some... constrictions on it.
Because they'll do it live.
They'll do it live. Here's why. I feel like, and this is a problem I have broadly in broadcast media, and maybe also in print in some ways, which is that over the years, personalities develop relationships with their audience, and it seems only fair to allow them to say a dignified farewell as long as it doesn't promote another station or settle scores. Just to say goodbye, it seems like
a sexual predator.
Thing. Well, let me ask. Let me ask John though. I mean, John, you've probably never been fired, have you? You're such a talented.
Not exactly sure
man.
What happened to me here if I was fired or not. But keep going.
But you're back. but don't you think? But I actually think WGN gave Kathy and Judy.
Yeah.
Like 2 hours. And it was a wonderful show, I thought. And I don't think it hurt the station.
I had a last show here, too.
Who did they molest?
Well, that's still yet to be discovered.
Isn't it, Scott?
That's a huge difference. It's a massive difference. You're talking about someone who
Here's another difference here. Bill O'Reilly is not being let go because he sexually harassed women. He's being let go because it got out into the general media.
Yeah,
they
were pretty careful.
They've been given money. They gave out $13 million over this. They knew that he was doing this.
Yeah, and they were paying it. He was too, but I think that's a very interesting point. The statement that they issued did not say it was because of his behavior. They did not reference his behavior. They simply said he's on vacation until infinity. That's what they
forever.
Said.
So, I feel like... I mean, the standard here is you can harass all the women you want, and as long as it doesn't get out into the media, make the front page of the New York Times and cost us advertisers, and when that happens, you're gone.
Okay,
but until then, they knew they were paying the money.
Okay, but what's your point? Because you're denigrating Fox here, but you're also trying to say that Bill O'Reilly should be given a last show.
I'm just saying you should be able to say farewell, maybe not an entire show, but maybe a five-minute segment.
A video pod.
On the other hand, I have to say, the other thing is, though, that this was my opinion. I used to cover radio years ago. And I this is something that kind of ate at me when they let people go and they didn't give them a chance to say goodbye. Now, of course, Bill O'Reilly can put out a podcast. He can put out a statement. It'll go viral. He doesn't really need Fox to say goodbye to his. So maybe I'll just change my opinion. That's kind of fashionable these days.
But
I'll completely flip-flop and say, no, he shouldn't have a show. Because he does have the opportunity to say goodbye.
And his viewers, his fans, did not do anything wrong. They liked him. Actually, I still do. He is a terrific television performer.
Yeah, he's a
good, an entertainer. He's informed. His books are kind of truthy. He's got an audience out there. And those people who like him didn't do anything wrong. What this whole conversation is ignoring is the opportunity for those people to hear his side of the story or at least hear him say goodbye. Like Eric said, maybe don't even settle scores, but say, it's been a privilege to talk to you each night. He said as much when he was... with the Pope. Oh, my God, is the timing on that unbelievable.
Yeah. He met with Pope John.
I'm sure the Pope is somewhere turning to one of his people going, really?
What was
really? Are you kidding me?
Who is my schedule?
Are you serious?
Who do I have to forgive today?
I know. This is not the photo op I need. I don't know if the Pope worries about optics, but that was a bad one. And it was a good one for O'Reilly. You know, not good enough for Fox, good enough for the guy in the hat. Boom. Drop the mic.
Where's he going to end up? I mean, you've got the Blaze, which is one place he could. I mean, he could end up in his own channel, which would make perfect sense.
Can't imagine he's going to find a platform as big as the one he had. So there's that.
Well, Keith Olbermann landed on, what is he? He does, I see him on my social media
feed.
Yeah, I mean, there are outlets if you want them. Now, he's 67, and he's a fabulously wealthy man already, and he also has a really big publishing franchise. That's an author, right? So there's no tag days for him. He doesn't need to keep working.
Right.
You get the feeling he wants to. By the way, his publisher said they'll keep publishing the books. There's no pullback there.
So I'm sure that he could get an opportunity with Alex Jones, may have some space on his channel.
Although Alex Jones is a radio guy, but and podcast guy.
Alex Jones there's a video component to his radio show.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't think he's broadcast on television, though, but they stream. No. There's a video element to his radio show.
I don't think that a cable news, I don't think CNN or MSNBC is going to hire him.
No, I don't know. Megyn Kelly went to NBC, and some people were wondering if she's ruining the day because she could have had O'Reilly's seat, but she'll be fine at NBC. And I don't know who's, I know what they're going to do. Tucker Carlson is going to move into that slot. And then the five are going to move to 9 o'clock, and they'll have to find a new afternoon show. They're kind of rearranging the chairs over there. But the last thing we should just touch on is where Scott started, and that is this environment that probably is still prevalent in other companies and broadcast outlets as well. Women and men toiling under the notion that we don't really treat the ladies fairly here, that lewd comments and squeezes and not hiring equally or promoting equally are tolerated. And everybody's just kind of rowing along to save their own ass as they work at these places. And even at a place that is celebrated for not doing that and then saying, okay, we got caught, we're going to fix it, still hadn't fixed it. And that's the shame of it all.
Well, and that's the, I mean, I just come from the perspective of you treat each person with dignity and respect, then, you know, your life is going to be good for everybody. And these companies don't. And for some reason, these guys get into their head. And let's face it, it's 99.99999% men who act this way.
Not 99% of all men act that way, but 99% of the cases of
men. Yeah, no, not all
I suppose there's the occasional female that behaves that way, too. Talk to me about the Lost Armada, Eric.
The Lost Armada,
I'm not picking the most important stories of the week today. I'm just picking the ones that have gotten the most traction.
Well, I'll talk to you about it. It seemed like yet another example. We're talking about Donald Trump saying that we had the battleship aircraft carrier, you know, headed toward North Korea when in fact it was headed toward Australia. I think it was
part of exercises
that he
there.
Didn't know. I mean, I get the feeling that he didn't know where. What was going on? That he was just bloviating.
Well, don't forget, in that interview, he said, I think it was CNN, he remembered the cake he was eating. He just didn't remember what country he was bombing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was delicious cake, though, by the way.
The best.
It's beautiful.
Well, I think which is more concerning to you? That the administration didn't know the location of the carrier strike force, or that they knew, but they were obfuscating about it?
I think you're overstating it when you say it's the administration. I mean, I think it was Trump, basically. I mean, it was Trump.
Okay, I'll
misleading.
Ask you the same question that way.
It's very troubling.
Which one's more bothersome, that maybe he didn't know or that he knew, but he was twisting it so that we thought, by God, they're there now, we'll show them?
I can't even really entertain a second possibility. I don't think that he knew. I think he was just kind of guessing.
Well, I think they're capable of lying or not telling the truth.
But that's the kind of lie you just can't get away with.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's not like
it did come out.
It's pretty obvious. You can't hide these things.
And the reports coming out of this White House, and it's become, the picture is clear, and this is no surprise to anybody, that this president is completely and utterly disengaged with detail, period. He doesn't care. He doesn't listen. He doesn't read reports. The fact that he doesn't know where, you know, a Navy is doesn't surprise me.
Honey, where's that aircraft carrier?
Oh, no, that implies more curiosity than I think this guy has.
Yeah, that implies that he would ask. But
Well, and the South Koreans are annoyed about this. I mean, it's not just like that we're rolling our eyes about this. This is actually creates some reverberations. First of all, it suggests to the North Koreans, and maybe this is a good thing, that this guy is just completely
as
disconnected.
Crazy as your leader.
Yeah, as crazy as your leader is. And the South Koreans are expressing dismay and feeling betrayed. Like, well, wait a minute, you said you're on the way, but you're on the way to Australia. What's going on?
Well, we were being fed, or we were cobbling together a false narrative altogether, because then the story was that the Russians and the Chinese were flagging our ships to surveil us, surveilling the North Koreans. I don't know where those ships were. Were they in Australia? Did they not exist? Were they looking for us off the shores of North Korea? I don't know where they were, but that was another part of the story. And as I read that last week, I thought, or was it early this week? I thought, oh, man, this thing's getting out of hand. We've got all of these warships. Now the planes are going to fly over each other. Now something's going to go wrong. Good Lord, you guys be careful here.
Well, this is exactly what I think a lot of us worry about, which is that one false move. And you know, suddenly, you know, if we overreact slightly to something, or if they overreact slightly to something, it's not inconceivable you could touch off a war that begins with North Korea shelling South Korea. I mean, they get to do extreme damage there without a lot of problems.
So then, Sean Spicer asked about this, the direction that the Armada was heading. Said, well, they were heading to North Korea. They said, yeah, but they were going south. He said, yeah, well, they were going south, and then they were going to go north.
They're taking the long way.
So that's...
it's a scenic route.
I mean, so you could say they're heading to Oklahoma if you wanted. Eventually, they'll get there. I mean, everybody is headed everywhere with that logic. We don't have to be going there now or even heading in that direction. It's still accurate for me to say we were going there as long as ultimately we get there. That's the kind of twisted logic that for about 3 minutes he ran by his White House press briefing yesterday. And the quizzical looks on the reporters' faces were priceless. Sean Spicer continues to have the hardest job in the world. The fact that he's able to get up every day and put on a suit coat is amazing.
Yeah, but he's the worst guy, worst press secretary I've ever seen. I mean, you just don't show up in the press room and look ticked off and start ticked
well,
off.
Well, he knows. Like, that day he went, oh, boy. I got to figure this one out. I've got to figure out a way to justify or paint that story into a plausible or a positive image. And he tried his best. God bless him.
What hunger for power or money would have prompted him to stay on in that job after the second day when Trump sent him out and said, tell them that we had the largest crowd ever at an inauguration?
Yeah, red flag.
I mean, at some point do you just say, you know what, find someone else to do this because I'm not going to mortgage my reputation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so I do. I mean, I have this impulse. Maybe you have it too. Just every once in a while, you just feel sorry for him.
Like, a little bit.
Like, oh my gosh, poor guy. But then you think, no, he chose this job and he continues to choose it every day. When he wakes up and puts on the suit that you're talking about, he knows what he's in for. He knows he's got this crazy guy whose statements are often just indefensible, and he's trying to defend them.
Well, that may not be fair, Eric. People believe in Donald Trump. People believe in the cause that Donald Trump represents, draining the swamp. And somebody's got to speak for him. And it's going to be an imperfect science, but somebody has to do it. That's his calling. That's his trade. He's going to do it. And people that support Donald Trump, even to this day, are listening to this, maybe not, and rolling their eyes at us. They're not rolling their eyes at Sean Spicer or Donald Trump. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see. I can
his
see.
Cause
you,
is,
see you can believe in the overall vision of Donald Trump, exactly what that is, I'm not sure. But you can believe in that. But you can also, if you're in a position, you know, as someone who is an observer and not a defender, you can say, well, yeah, you know, yes, he gets things wrong. He's wrong about that. Sean Spicer is not allowed ever to say, yes, the president misspoke.
That's my point.
He doesn't get to say that.
This is what the job is.
So, yeah, but that's a terrible job to have. I can see saying, look, yes, Donald Trump has weakened all these details, but I'm really glad he's president because X, Y, and Z. But you can't say, yeah, this guy is getting it right. Yes, he did. President Obama did bug wiretap Trump Tower, and we had the biggest crowds.
Well, what's Sean
Spicer
supposed to do about that?
Well, at some point, somebody, and there's nobody around Trump.
That's not Sean Spicer's job.
It's not.
Before the White House press
corps. It's Ryan Priebus's job, I guess.
Sure it is. Maybe it's Ivanka's job. I mean, somebody needs to try and tell him to start telling the truth. But when Sean Spicer represents the administration before the United States press, his job isn't to call him out.
Yeah, but if somebody asked you, John, to say things that you knew were not true and to put your reputation on the line— would you do it? I mean, you might do it if you needed to feed your family.
No, but I would say that the Armada was heading to North Korea via Australia. They were going south before they went north.
They were
going
to pick up some souvenirs before they got there.
Do you
buy
guys
some little
think
koala bears.
That the Chicago Cubs, he said, segueing from the whatever that was.
This is professional radio here.
Don't try this at home, kids.
What's your take, Scott, on the Cubs rings and the generous distribution of them? And the letter to the recipients that they can't sell it or trade it.
I thought it was brilliant. I thought the rings themselves are, as all championship rings are, atrocious. I mean, it is.
Well, I think they're glorious.
They're glorious because of what they represent.
Well,
but
I mean,
would you go into it? You would never. I'm looking at what you're wearing now. You're not wearing a ring that's bigger than your head. You know, there's nothing.
I'm not the world champion either. I'll tell you what.
Oh, sure you are, John.
If I was in Game 7, I might be wearing that ring right now.
Oh, no, it's awesome.
You're a White Sox fan.
No.
Let's just lay
I'm a Cubs fan. No.
I thought you were a White Sox fan.
No, I'm a Cubs fan. I was told to be one by John Cass. So I he can be surly.
He told you to be a White Sox fan or Cubs fan?
Cubs fan.
Well,
why
is that?
Okay, we're outside smoking first week here. I said, John,
That's good advice.
I don't smoke anymore. I haven't had a cigarette in over 4 years. So yay me.
No, but if you were new to town, keep going.
So I said, John, I don't know. I hate the American League. You can actually track the decline of the American culture with the institution of the designated hitter rule. This is math. You can't deny it. It just goes. But clearly, the Sox at the time were dedicated to winning. So I'm kind of torn. He goes, "What's your address?" I go, "What?" He goes, "What's your bleeping address?" I go, "Well, it's blah, 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 North so and so." He goes, North, Cubs, done. And that's how I became a Cubs fan. So I love the Cubs, but the ring is atrocious. But it's awesome. And I think sending out the letter saying you have to give us first opportunity to buy it back for $1. I think that's right. So you don't see it on eBay.
You think it's right? It's not a gift,
Scott.
Then. It's not a gift.
Did John Cass tell you to say that, too? Really?
No, John Cass does not tell me everything
Good
to
Lord.
Say. I don't check
no,
in with
I
him.
Thought that. And I, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong about this, that directive doesn't apply to players. That Rizzo,
is that true?
Rizzo can hang on. I'm saying this, but Elif will edit this out if it's wrong, but I think that's true. I think that the players can do what they want, but it's like the because they give a whole bunch of these out, and
a couple thousand.
I guess the ones that for the players are the ones with all the diamonds.
There's three tiers of the rings, and Judy Pilak, who does news here at this radio station, her son has a part-time job for the Cubs. As we record this today, he has his ring. Judy's going to bring it by tomorrow. Check it out on Facebook.
But it's not a gift if you can't. Do what
exactly.
you want with it.
It's not a gift. You can't. If I gave you a gift, Scott, for Christmas, and then I found that you didn't want, like, or need that gift anymore, or maybe you were cash strapped and you decided to sell it, do you think it would be appropriate for me to tell you I get that gift back for $1?
If it's a copyright, if it's like my cartoon, yeah, I think I would. That's copyrighted, Mister. I'm kidding.
Eric, you talk to him.
I will. No,
talk sense into the guy.
The stories that I read about this also suggested that this is not common practice. If it were like this is how it's always done around in professional sports, we give out these championship things, but we don't want them on the market. But this has only been done like a few other times, and it just strikes me as kind of like why give them a gift and move on.
Well, I think Scott's onto something. It's the brand,
yeah,
and you like it to stay in the family. And if it turns up in places that don't reflect nicely on you, maybe on the finger of John Cass, then you'd think, well, that looks bad for us. You know, to me, it's a little like bumper stickers when you see a radio station bumper sticker and the car that it's on is all beat up, or the driver just gave you the finger. And I see that bumper sticker and associate either beat up and run down or obnoxious with the radio station. A friend of mine in the business said, I don't like bumper stickers for that reason. We're throwing off all sorts of brand associations we can't control. Somehow I think the Cubs must be thinking along those lines.
Well, all the winos wearing their Cub jerseys. I mean, I don't think people
actually. Yeah, when you
think,
go to a Cubs game, there's a lot of bad associations there as it is. Finally, the mayor has continued to use a private server. Boy, hasn't this country dealt with this before for city business? And the Ethics Board is looking into it. And it's on page one of the Chicago Tribune again today, Thursday the 20th. What about that, Eric?
Is it a private server or just a private email account? I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. I said server. I think it's more just an email account that people are reaching out to him on.
I understand why people have separate email accounts for various things. But and I also understand that when you are... You know, someone like Rahm Emanuel, who's been around town for a long time, you have friends, you have sort of private correspondence.
You have people that are both friends who are also city or business figures.
Yeah, it just seems to me that when you are now the mayor, the president in these offices, that one of the things you have to give up is this private email, I guess. I mean, you can't or you have to be. Develop this radar where if a friend writes you and suggests anything to do with your job, you say, hey, we're going to have to move this over to my public, my more public channel. So
if I reach out to the mayor and say, hey, I got a great idea. The head of Jam Productions did this. He said, let's, like we did the Cows on Parade, do the Lips on Parade all around the city in conjunction with the Rolling Stones anniversary exhibit at Navy Pier. So people will be taking selfies and we'll put these lips, people will buy them, we could auction them off, we'll raise money. It's just a great, cool thing. That was an exchange that he had with the mayor on the mayor's private email account. I didn't see anything wrong with that. And yet that's one of the revelations. Nowhere in this so far has the mayor said, give me $10,000 behind the building and then I'll see what we can do.
Yeah, but Eric has to correct me on this. Aren't these emails that we've seen so far what the mayor has released himself?
Well, I don't think that...
It was a FOIA that got him out.
It's the FOIA that gets them out, but his attorneys go through and pick out what they believe is FOIable.
Yeah.
So
you don't trust the full release of these, Scott?
Of course not.
But I mean, to get to your point, exactly. I mean, there needs to be a way, I think, for these people who are the head of Jam Productions or people who know him personally to sort of interact with him without having to go to mayor@cityofchicago.org or whatever his formal address is. I think there has to be a way. Maybe there doesn't. Maybe he just needs to have that be his email address, and he can handle all his correspondence on that server because it's not like the public just gets to read that. There's a process for FOIA requests. And
Freedom of Information Act,
yeah. So, maybe what you have to do is just you put it all onto a public server and you say, hey, tell your friends that you got to write to me on this. And if it's a private exchange, then it's not public record. And if it's just something as innocuous as what John described, as long as this guy from Jam is saying, hey, give me a taste of this, we'll do this, but I want to do it and make money off it.
Do you trust the mayor on this issue generally? I mean, it's really about transparency, and so far we haven't seen anything terrible. Do you think he's corrupt or corruptible because vis-a-vis his private email account?
I don't think Mayor Emanuel's corrupt. I don't think Mayor Richard Daley was corrupt. I think these guys, they like power, they accumulate power, but I think the word corruption is thrown around far too loosely in terms of actually, is this person actually venal? And so, in every sense, is every politician corrupt because they're getting campaign donations and they're doing public acts? And I think you need to reserve the term corruption for someone who is really well over the line.
You mean like Blagojevich?
Yes, but I have no evidence at all. I mean, and I say this about Richard M. Daley too. I mean, Richard M. Daley. He knew how to work the levers of power, learn how to play the inside game. But would you say he was corrupt?
I think they all lord over a corrupt system, and they know that it's corrupt. I think Michael Madigan, they've been investigated for the last, 5,000 years he's been speaker, and they've never been able to get anywhere close to him. But because he knows how to rig the system. They also know how to change rules and laws, transparency being among them, so that the system can perpetuate and go forward. It's a corrupt system. Are they personally corrupt? You can't say that right now.
You can't, and as I said, the entire system where people are allowed to give vast amounts of money to politicians is there's an inherently sort of corrupting quality to that.
You bet.
But again, I hesitate to put the label of corrupt onto a politician, you know, is the whole entire American electoral political system, is it?
We're talking Chicago and Illinois here.
But we're also talking Wisconsin and Michigan and Indiana, any place really where politicians are raking in money from interest groups and running for office. I mean, is that there's conflicts, there's corruption in that inherently.
But we're talking about a system that is so untransparent that many of our reporters still have to go to police headquarters, police stations, and file a FOIA to get a police report, which is a public document.
It shouldn't be that.
This
difficult.
Is how bad it is here in Chicago and the state of Illinois.
But that's a transparency issue. That's not necessarily a corruption issue.
Of course, right? It is. They're hand in hand.
That's how you hide corruption. You're not transparent.
Yeah, if you can hide in the dark. How many is?
But if you're looking at like a police, the inability to get police reports. I mean, that is a sclerotic, untransparent system, and it does give it provides a breeding ground for corruption. But it's not inherently corrupt to have a lazy or inadequate FOIA.
Okay, but then you're with me that it's not that big a deal that the mayor is using a private email account.
Can I throw out a question? Because I have the same thing. I have a Gmail account and I have a Chicago Tribune account.
Yeah, I do too.
And they're, I mean, business.
I go back and forth between the two all
exactly,
the time.
Exactly. So I think that it could be just as innocent as that.
It's a pain in the butt, to be honest with you. I mean, it would be easier for me, my life, if I just ran everything. In fact, when I'm setting up interviews or talking to people off the air, sort of prepping them for interviews, I give my cell phone account. I just have my one private cell phone number. That's how I do a lot of business.
I do a lot of business by Gmail, and one reason is because Gmail is your address. If you ever leave WGN again, or if you ever leave Tronk, those addresses go away.
Tronk.
And so all your contacts, everything that's associated with that, the entire history belongs to the company.
Plus, it's a filter. I mean, the people that I do tend to have those private conversations or business conversations with on my private phone and email account, my Gmail, my cell phone, there's not as much spam coming through there. There's not as much corporate stuff that I really don't want to spend time with on my Gmail account. One last thing, fellas. Blagojevich, I just mentioned him. Eric, do you have any interest in letting the former governor out a little early?
You know, not until he comes clean on what he did and admits that it was wrong. And I do think that his sentence is awfully long for what he did. But I think that one of the big reasons that he's still in there is that he has shown so little contrition. And his attorney was arguing the other day, well, he didn't do anything wrong, so he didn't commit any crime, so he can't admit to them. And this is actually a sticking point. I believe it came up in the arguments. He had there was a hearing, I want to say Tuesday morning, another appeals panel, federal court appeals panel. And I think this came up, which is Governor Blagojevich has never just come clean and said, hey, you know, I did these bad things and I'm really sorry for them. His apology at his sentencing was very hedged. He was very cagey about what he said. And he just seems to have never really gotten his mind around what he did and why it was so bad.
It's an interesting argument that he puts forward. The difference between lobbying for votes and selling votes is hard to discern. The problem for him is that didn't work. They said, oh, yes, it is. You were trading, and therefore you go to jail now. So even though he felt that was the right angle, it didn't work. So he really does need to do a full-scale mea culpa, and he won't.
You just need to say, this is what I did. And he doesn't have to then turn around and say, and I think I was right. Or he just has to say, this is what I did, and I'm really sorry that
I
did
sorry. It. And you're right. I would throw my – if I wanted to see my kids graduate from high school, I would I would find the words. I would become the world's greatest actor if I didn't believe them.
Exactly. No, I think I hadn't thought of it that way. That, if he was contrite, then
14 years, it is really a long sentence.
Oh, my gosh.
For all the people who have, like, killed people.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Well, this was obviously a shot across the bow. This was a message
to
other
elected
officials.
Well, that's going to work, isn't it, Scott?
Well, so far it's been.
No, really. I mean, think about that. This idea that if we punish Blagojevich severely enough, because what, George Ryan got off easy?
I mean, George Ryan was in prison for a 6.5-year sentence while Blagojevich was doing some of this stuff.
You know, I just don't think that works. I don't understand the brains of these people, why they even get near what could be an offense that'll send them to jail. But they do. That's the nature of the beast. All right, we're out of time. We close the podcast with any recommendations from the Mincing Rascals on things that they think you should eat, watch, listen to, or read. Scott, anything on your recommendation list this week?
It came across my... I was listening to Shuffle on my phone, and the Ducks, a terrific group I've kind of stumbled on in the early 90s. It's spelled the, traditional spelling, Ducks, D-U-H-K-S. And get the your daughters and your sons with Jesse Javi. She left the group, I think, after that album or the next one. It's remarkable. It's like singer-songwriter, bluegrassy. She has this real bluesy, great voice. Really, it's just
really?
Remarkable.
D-U-H-K-S.
Yes.
Sold.
Looks like
sounds
the Dukes.
Good.
Oh, yeah. I'll do a musical one, too. So Prince passed away a year ago. They have vaults of music of his, and five or six tracks have been found and are being released. There's a legal battle over who controls the rights to them. But one of the songs has already dropped, and that's called, I believe it's Revolution. If you Google new Prince purloined track or whatever, it's fantastic. It is so good, it will make you sad for the music that is lost, because it's really funky Prince. You know, he had a career that was sometimes fantastic, and sometimes he was just churning stuff out. But this song, I can't speak for the other tracks, is worth a download. How about you, Eric?
I got two. One of them I'm a little hesitant to endorse because it's an Audible series, and I'm not. You know, it's a lot of times here we endorse subscription TV things from Netflix and Amazon Prime and so on. I think not as many people subscribe to Audible, but it's called 100 to 1, and it's a series about the crack epidemic and how it started, and how 101 refers to the penalties that were imposed by the government 100 times greater for crack cocaine than for powder cocaine. And of course, crack cocaine was favored by the minority community, African Americans, and the impact that this had on society. It's an excellent 6 or 7 part series. If you're an Audible subscriber, I really recommend that. For everybody else, I'm recommending a website called Trump Tracker. Which is trumptracker.github.io. And it basically keeps track of all of Trump's promises and color codes them and tells you, you know, what progress he might have made on them and how many of them he's fulfilled and how many he has reversed himself on.
Wrong.
And it's
wrong.
It's just a useful site if you want to go there and just kind of soak
don't
in
go there,
all
Eric.
This Trump.
Don't
go there. Just don't.
You know, I don't think it's my place to shoot down your recommendation. It's your recommendation. You get to recommend whatever you want. But really? Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Trump Tracker.
Okay. Well, that's the podcast for this week. Thank you, Ben Cortez. He's our engineer. Elif Garris is our producer. I'm John Williams. Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist and the creator of the Prickly Pear.
Prickly City podcast.
Yeah, but there's your cartoonist, Prickly City.
Yes.
And then there's the Prickly City podcast.
Yes.
Prickly Pear was a podcast that Scott and I did 5 years ago or so here in these very studios.
I knew the word prickly was in there for some reason.
And
Eric Zorn is the columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Steve Bertrand's away this week. He's in Ireland. And Kristen McQuarrie will join us again another day, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you!